Good morning, everybody. And before we cavil into session, we have two very quick special presentations. Tom Lipton, can you come up?
Yes.
Tom is going to be giving us a 15-minute speech on the importance of eco-roofs. Have a seat. I'm joking. We have a proclamation. We have a proclamation, and Tom is a national expert in green and eco-roof facilities. And so I'm very pleased today to read the proclamation that proclaims March to be Eco-Roof Month, and no moss on your roof does not count. We're joined by Bob Salinger. So the proclamation reads as follows. Whereas eco-roofs, along with urban forest canopy, green streets, rain gardens, invasive species control and protection, and restoration of natural areas, floodplains, stream corridors, are all key elements of integrating the built and natural environments and creating livable urban landscapes for humans and wildlife alike. Whereas the city adopted the Portland Watershed Management Plan in 2005. Whereas the long-term success of the Big Pipe project is dependent upon implementing green strategies, whereas eco-roofs provide multiple ecosystem services or benefits, including decreasing stormwater runoff, reducing energy use, filtering air pollutants, reducing urban heat island effect, and preserving fish and wildlife habitat. Whereas the City of Portland has created an incentive program designed to promote eco-roof development that offers up to $5 per square foot toward the installation of eco-roofs, now therefore I, Sam Adams, along with the City Council, do hereby proclaim March 2010 to be Portland Eco-Roof Month. Congratulations. Would you like to make a few comments?
Yes, good morning. I'll be very brief. My name is Bob Salinger. I'm the Conservation Director for Portland Audubon Society. we appreciate you doing this. We have a number of great events during the month. I'll leave a couple of newsletters that outline them. City of Portland's doing a two-day event on eco-roofs. We're having a bunch of field trips. We're bringing in Dusty Gedge, who's an expert from Europe, on designing eco-roofs for biodiversity. I think we just have a tremendous opportunity in front of us to be a world leader in eco-roofs. And we need to get beyond just the baseline of dealing with stormwater, because they can do a lot more. And I think about places like the North Reach and the Columbia Corridor that are just covered in giant buildings that, A, should be capturing stormwater, but, B, that we could actually create functional habitat on and really restore the landscape. I also think of equity issues as well, where we could perhaps create some innovative green spaces in places that don't have necessarily land-based sites. You know, get people up on those rooftops, let them have a good time. We're trying to engage Siltronics, which the city is negotiating with. I guess the hearing's been canceled today, in actually working with us. They're talking about designing one of the second largest building in Portland in terms of square foot area, to design an eco-roof for them that would actually create habitat and replace the grassland that this building will someday sit upon. So we're excited about this, but our goal really is to just get the word out, to use this as an opportunity over the course of the month to engage people and get them excited. I think they already are, but we can take it to a new level. So thank you.
Thank you for all your advocacy, Tom. And then I'd like Commissioner Saltzman to say a few words as well.
I just want to say thank you very much. It was March 1996 when I began to put the eco-roof on my garage, and so it's a pretty special day. And for me to feel speechless is pretty unusual. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks, Mayor, for this proclamation. And eco-roofs and green roofs are, I think, essential, not only, as Bob Salinger said, for keeping stormwater out of our big pipes and the pollutants it carries out of our rivers, but I do believe that a next push needs to be on creating habitat. And, you know, I think when you talk about eco-roofs as being new ideas, they're not new ideas. If you go back to the Babylonians, they figured it out a long time ago that eco-roofs, roof gardens, made a lot of sense. And so it's taking an old idea and giving new life to it in a time when we need new cost-effective solutions to keep our water clean and our habitat abundant. And I know, Bob, you mentioned all those buildings on the north reach of the Willamette River, but I think every one of us, every time we go over the Hawthorne Bridge and look at all those warehouses on the Inner East Side, too, I know a lot of us envision the day when we're going to see those have eco roofs as well. So this is great. And I finally wanted to mention we are having, the Bureau of Environmental Services is having an eco roof program event coming up on March 12th and 13th. So if you're interested in installing your own eco roof, experts will be doing demonstrations and will be available to answer all your questions. For more information, go to the Portland Eco Roof blog for details.
And I think that's the first time that I've heard the Babylonians cited as a justification for good policy. But yeah, it totally makes sense. Webb, so let me give you this.
One thing I meant to mention, I'm sorry, very briefly, is, you know, we're bringing this expert in from Europe who works on eco-roofs and biodiversity eco-roofs, and we're very excited about that. And I called Tom first to see if he would add some value to the city, and the city helped sponsor that. And Tom said, yeah, absolutely, bring him in. But as soon as I called him, he said, you have Tom Lipton. You have one of the world's foremost experts here, too. And I mean, Tom's work has been unbelievable. And so we have a real treasure here. And we talk to people around the world about these things, and people say, you know, Tom Lipton. So
it's true. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We also have an expert coming in on the 12th who will be at our event from Maryland, who's another treasure. His name's Ed Snodgrass, and he's written a book. So anybody great that comes.
All right. Today is Wednesday, March 3rd, 2010. It's 9:30 a.m., and the Portland City Council is in morning session. We'll come to order. Good morning, Carla. How are you?
I'm good.
Can you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Quorum is present. Begin with communications. Can you please read the title for communications? Item number 263.
Request of Terry Lynn Vick to address council regarding mistreatment of city employees at the Bureau of Emergency Communications. She called in and has to reschedule.
Okay. Can you please read the title for communications? Item number 264.
Request of Ibrahim Mubarak to address council regarding homelessness.
Mr. Mubarak, can you please read the title for council communications item number 265?
Request of Calvin Martinez to address council regarding homelessness.
Mr. Martinez, all right. Can you please read the title for council communications item number 266?
Request of Ken Lloyd to address council regarding homeless issues, housing, sit-lie, and anti-camping.
Mr. Lloyd, are you here? Hi, welcome. Come on up. You only need to give us your first and last name for the record, and that clock in front of you will help you count down 3 minutes.
My name is Ken Lloyd, spelled L-O-Y-D. I'm a citizen of the Boyce Elliott neighborhood. I've been there for 11 years. I am a co-pastor of Home PDX, which is a church exclusively for our friends who live outdoors in downtown Portland, and also a member of Oregon Center for Christian Values. I was here, I'm thinking it's 4 or 5 months ago when the Committee for Disabilities was launched. That was a proud day for me as a citizen of Portland. When I think about it, tears just well up. It was such a wonderful thing to see our friends, our fellow citizens, welcomed into the full citizenship in the city of Oregon, in the city of Portland. It was a wonderful day. And we recognized at that time that these are good people, but they're vulnerable people, and they need our help in order to maximize their abilities and their functioning in this city. And we've done an excellent job. We're aiming at surpassing, not just equaling, but surpassing state and federal law, which is a wonderful thing. I also have a dream of a proud moment when the homeless citizens, my friends who live outdoors, are welcomed as full citizens in Portland. And one recommendation that I would respectfully make to the City Council is that tents be allowed to stay up during the day rather than put up and removed, which where the winter is almost gone, but the rainy season continues for many months. Putting up and tearing down a tent is an experience in getting wet, We all know that if we've been camping ever. And so what I'm looking for is a place where our friends on public property are welcomed until and unless we provide housing for all of those who want housing, to put up tents and freely be able to keep warm as full citizens, or the beginning of full citizenship in this city. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, very much. Appreciate your testimony. Carla, can you please read Council Communications Item Number 267?
Request of John Molis to address Council regarding the state of the construction industry.
Good morning, Commissioner. Welcome back. Glad you're here.
Good morning, Mayor Adams, Commissioners, John Molis with the Columbia Pacific Building Trades Council. First, I want to thank each of you for all the hard work you do in making Portland a better place to live. I'm here today to provide you with an update on the state of the construction industry in Oregon, which is primarily driven by the Portland metro market. I believe we're in the worst construction downturn since the Great Depression, and I believe it's going to get worse before it gets better. And if we have time at the end, I can share some examples. Unemployment varies from local to local, but the average is 35% of our active members, journeymen and women, and apprentices, are out of work. Some have been out of work since October 2008, not 09. Members who are being laid off from projects and return to the hall and sign the out-of-work lists are being told they can expect to be on those out-of-work lists for a year to a year and a half. Oregon's been considered a leader in many positive areas for many years, the bottle bill, beach access, urban planning. Sadly, we're now leading the nation in categories I know none of us can be proud of. We're in the top five in the nation in unemployment, hunger, and homelessness. I recently read a quote that I thought summed up the long-term dangerous consequences of pervasive unemployment much more eloquently than anything I could come up with. This is from the March 2010 edition of The Atlantic. The author is Don Peck. There is unemployment, a brief and relatively routine transitional state that results from the rise and fall of companies in any economy, and there is unemployment, chronic, all-consuming. The former is a necessary lubricant in any engine of economic growth. The latter is a pestilence that slowly eats away at people, families, and if it spreads widely enough, the fabric of our society, end quote. I would respectfully request that you do everything in your power to move construction projects forward, whether through state or federal stimulus dollars or moving forward planned city projects if possible. I would also respectfully request that if there are projects in the hopper, whether a road, a bridge, or a building, please do not do anything that would impede the progress of any such project that would put folks back to work. I want to briefly go back to our out-of-work apprentices. It's especially tough on them because obviously they make less than journey-level scale. But what's tough from an industry perspective is that our JATCs, along with our industry partners, spent a great deal of time and effort over the last 5 to 10 years to diversify our workforce. Many of these unemployed apprentices are in the second or third year of a 3, 4, or 5 year apprenticeship, and I hope they have the resources and fortitude to tough it out and return to work and journey out. But I can tell you from my 32 years in the industry, some will not. After a certain amount of time, they'll come to the conclusion that the construction industry has no future for them. They'll find something else to do to put food on the table and walk away. And I believe that's tremendously sad for these individuals and a loss for the construction industry. So in closing, I would ask you to do everything in your power to help move projects forward. Thanks for the opportunity, and I'll do my best to answer any questions.
Well, I just want to thank you for your service on the Portland Development Commission and your tireless advocacy there and elsewhere for the concerns of working people and people that are trying to get work or are underemployed, of which we also have an unacceptably high percentage as well. Some of the things that you've helped, you partnered with us on the City Council to see move forward, the East Side streetcar, the construction of streetcars here, key work from Commissioner Leonard's office, city spending. This isn't going to be exactly the right number, but it's up 80% over last year. PG Park, the Resource Access Center, funding for the Selwood Bridge. Week before last, we found the $30 million, which I didn't know we were necessarily going to be able to find for the light rail, which is 12,000 jobs, starts next summer to Milwaukee, and then Clean Energy Works, which through the Emerald Cities you've been a key partner on. Clearly that's not enough given the magnitude of the problem, so we have a lot more work to do, but this should inspire us that we can do more.
Agreed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jen. All right. We have three time certains, so let's move through the first one. Can you please read title, time certain title 268?
Do you want to do the consent agenda?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Forgot. Actually, we have four time certains. Anyone wish to pull any item from the consent agenda? please call the vote on the consent agenda.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Now, could you please read the title for time certain, item number 268?
Adopt budget adjustment recommendations and the supplemental budget for the fiscal year 2009-10 winter supplemental budget process and make budget adjustments in various funds.
Mr. Scott.
Good morning. I'm Andrew Scott, financial planning. We had a work session on the bump 2 weeks ago, so I'm not going to go through a lot of details. I'll just hit very briefly some of the major points that are being adopted in this ordinance before you today. In terms of the general fund, the winter bump is setting aside $2.85 million for the fiscal year 2010-11 budget process. Those are monies coming from a recent franchise settlement with McLeod Communications, pension obligation bonds excess of about $1.2 million, and then some small amounts of returned fund from the Emergency Communications Fund and the Business License Surcharge Fund. It also reduces plan and permit revenues at the Fire Bureau by $400,000 because those permit revenues have declined, and it reduces towing fees at the Police Bureau by $735,000 because of some policy changes there regarding towing. Finally, it approves a cable position as an ongoing position in the fiscal year 2010-11 budget. Outside of the general fund, the bump transfers $1.9 million of excess pension obligation bonds. Again, the general fund portion is going into reserve for next year, but $1.9 million is being transferred to the EBS fund. That's going to serve as bridge funding for ongoing operations and implementation during 2010-11, and then the ongoing costs are going to be requested in interagency rates for fiscal year 2011-12. At BDS, the winter bump moves $500,000 from the neighborhood inspection team back to land use services. In the health fund, we're transferring $3.4 million from contingency into the fund to cover increased medical claims, which so far this year are up about 17%. And then finally, there are a number of position changes which need to be approved by council. We discussed most of these at the work session. I did want to point out in the ordinance language, we do mention 41 placeholder positions for the Portland Housing Bureau. I just want to stress it's a purely technical change that we're making. It makes it easier for the Housing Bureau to complete its 2010-11 budget, but it is not actually creating the position authority. That's going to come during the budget process. But we did want to get sort of official council sign-off on just creating those positions, and again, it's a purely technical change. So at this point, if there are no more questions, we just need to open the hearing for testimony, and then we'll be good to go.
I now open the hearing on the proposed winter supplemental bump. So we're impaneled as the city's budget committee at this point under Oregon revised statutes. Is there anyone who wishes to testify on the winter supplemental budget?
One person sign up. Beth?
Welcome, Beth.
Yes. I've been watching you all on TV for some years now.
How do we look in person?
A little more intimidating.
Oh, no. We're glad you're here. You only have to give us your first
Thank
and
you.
Last name, and that clock will help you count down your 3 minutes.
I've been watching. My name is Beth John Syracuse, and I've been sending emails to y'all for some time now about our water system. We have a card going around that we're asking our Senator Merkley to sign, to work with us in getting a waiver for our water. I feel that what's happening is that the EPA is very off. We have things such as, I wanted to read this in, written testimony of Francis T. Griffo, PhD, senior scientist with the Union of Concerted Scientists, director of Scientific Integrity Program. The Scientific Integrity and Transparency Reform of the EPA. And he goes on to say that this testimony is presented Let's see. Good morning. My name is. Okay. The written testimony contains a brief introduction, a discussion of recent developments as the EPA, and a short-term recommendations for strengthening scientific integrity at the EPA. Discussions of long-term issues, which is what this is. We are dealing with a very long-term issue that this gentleman by the name of Joe Glicker, regardless of what company he's in, he's now in CH2M Hill. He has been behind closed doors with the EPA. He has written an LT2 rule. I have found him writing the manual for the closed reservoirs. He's been a 14-year chief engineer here. He's got the inside track to everything, and now you've awarded him in the water project for the UV stuff. And that's also under problems. They've got another company, the one that owns the patent, has got a problem with the UV filter. So we have a gentleman by the name of Joe Glicker that no one knows that is pulling a lot of strings back there. And I don't know what to do. All I can do is continue to go to our senator. Although the last meeting we had, everyone that came in April, basically the federal government said, we can't do anything unless the citizens can get along with Randy Leonard. Well, the problem is that Randy Leonard keeps moving the citizens in angry protests. They put a perb in there with people that are coming and falsifying or not bringing in all the information they got in front of you and did a work session. I don't understand that. I don't understand how that could happen where not the other side is being heard. I mean, I take these cards down the street and people ask me for them. I stand in lines at the grocery store. Why are we spending $1.2 billion on a water system that you all know we don't need? The state even knows that we don't have cryptosporidium. We have beautiful reservoirs that need to be fixed. And we have new technology from before 1974, because that's when Joe Glicker is basically putting these things. So I just wanted to make sure that y'all don't consider all that in the winter budget.
Well, just, I know I speak for the whole council when I say we don't want to have to spend that money either. So we agree with your efforts to get a waiver from EPA.
And New York is asking for an extension, a 10-year extension, Randy. I would really like you to look into that some more so we can do that. I really think that you do have us all in your prayers.
Thank you for your advocacy. It was really well done.
Thank you.
All right, unless there's additional testimony, we have to vote while we're the budget committee, right? Or do we vote as a council? We adjourn now. Close the hearing. We are now back to being the city council, no longer the budget committee. Carla, would you please call the vote on the supplemental winter supplemental budget, item number 268.
Fritz?
Well, thank you to Andrew Scott and your team. Really good work. And I'm very pleased, of course, that the cable, both the money coming to the general fund and with our administrative position being formalized. I am wondering how the Police Bureau is going to be able to balance their budget by the end of the fiscal year, and Commissioner Leonard raised that issue at the work session, so that's something that will be ongoing, but this is a winter adjustment. We are appreciative of the whole team for looking after our finances so carefully and guiding us through this. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank the Bureau of Financial Planning team as well, led by Andrew. And I also want to welcome the new fiscal director for the Bureau of Police. Is that correct? Senior Business Operations Manager. And your name again? I apologize.
Catherine Ryland,
who I just met, attended her first Citizen Budget Committee. And you're days new to Portland. So one of our newest Portlanders. We welcome you aboard as part of the team at the financial group at Police. Aye. So approved. We have a few minutes, so I'm going to, before our time certain, so unless there's council objection, I'm continuing or moving item number 271 to March 24th. Do we have a time certain slot?
Yes, 2:05 p.m.
Can you read the title, please?
Mm-hmm. 271. Accept Memorandum of Understanding between Siltronic and the City of Portland.
Mayor, I have just a question. Is March 24th that week of spring break?
Yes.
It is.
And do we know we have a quorum for that meeting?
I don't have any absences.
I need to submit one.
Pardon?
I need to submit one.
Okay.
Are you going to be?
That would help.
I may or may not. I understood that's one of the reasons we moved something from that.
I'm happy to continue beyond that.
If you, yep. Just to be safe, Mayor?
Can we move it beyond that so we give people the option? A week beyond that. I need it before the river plan. We can have it the same day as the river plan if you want.
Okay. You want to give it the 2 o'clock spot on the first when the river plan happens? And then river plan?
What time is the river plan at?
It's at 2.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So we'll give it April 1st at 2 p.m.
And where does the river plan go?
Oh, they're, we'll basically
do them both at the same time?
Yeah, we'll do them together.
Yep. Okay.
All right, so no objections. 271 is moved. Does anyone have a really quick item? Do we have seconds that we can read through? Let's see here. Yes, can you please read item 304?
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the State of Oregon Department of Environmental Quality for administration of National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System 1200Z, 1200 COLS, and 1200A general permits for stormwater discharges from industrial activities.
Please call the vote.
Fritz.
Well, we have a wonderful team of staff at the Bureau of Environmental Services who understand what the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System is. It was one of the issues that I started learning about 10 years or so ago, and I'm very impressed with the staff's work on it. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
And it provides me great comfort that our commissioner in charge actually studied these kinds of issues in college. Aye. 304 is approved. Can you please read the title for second reading item number 305?
Authorize the Bureau of Environmental Services to acquire certain permanent easements necessary for construction of the Northeast 33rd Drive Culvert Replacement Project number E07154 through the exercise of the city's eminent domain authority.
Carla, can you please call the vote? Second reading, 305.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Oh. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 305 is approved. Does anyone see any other second readings?
No.
Okay, I
think the people are here for 10
yeah.
o'clock.
Are we ready, Commissioner Leonard?
Should we do
one more item?
Let's do one more item.
Okay. We have a... I saw something that looked dangerously like a second reading. Where's the one that we previously read? I saw here somewhere.
Do you want to do the appeal findings?
Will the appeal findings take long?
Maybe the staff's not here.
Not if you all agree on them.
I don't know if the staff's here.
Okay. Well, we should probably wait for that one. There's one here that says previous. All right. Well,
That's findings as well. Never mind. Oh, this one's the staff's there.
Okay, let's do. Can you please read the title for item 294? Thanks, Commissioner Fritz.
294. Provide for city-paid COBRA coverage for eligible dependents of deceased city employees.
This is really important reform that I understand correctly has the unanimous support of the City Council. It is a compassionate and necessary improvement and change that shows to our employees under certain situations that we are going to take care of their families. So I would urge the council support for it. Is there anyone that wishes to testify in item 294? Is there any council discussion?
I would just like to... thank the mayor for bringing this forward. In the police bureau, in the last 3 to 4 months, we've had two officers who have been killed in, well, off duty, but killed in, I'm sorry, either died of heart condition or killed in an auto accident. And the one thing, these are young officers. They're about their mid-30s. They have young kids and family, and extension of their medical benefits beyond 6 months is going to be a huge difference in a positive manner for these families. So I support this, and thank you for bringing this forward.
Unless there's additional discussion, Carla, can you please call the vote on emergency ordinance item number 294?
No one signed up to testify. Fritz?
So currently the coverage is only for dependents of employees when the employee has an on-duty death. And so clearly an unexpected death is difficult to deal with at any time, but then having to worry about finding medical insurance quickly is a burden we don't want to give to our employees' families. So I'm very pleased to support this, and I thank you for bringing it forward. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 294 is approved. We now will move to our second time certain item. Carla, can you please read the title for time certain item number 269?
Proclaim March 10, 2010 to be Tibet Awareness Day in Portland.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
In a moment, Mayor Adams is going to read the proclamation he is issuing that recognizes the day of recognition, traditional day of recognition for the country of Tibet, which is on March 10th. This March 10th will mark 51 years since the Chinese invaded Tibet and the Dalai Lama fled with his government and set up a government in India. The original Chinese invasion occurred in 1950, and on March 10th, 1959, the date that the Chinese began trying to abduct the Dalai Lama, the Tibetan people defended him, surrounded his home, and prevented the Dalai Lama from being abducted. In that effort, 86,000 Tibetans were killed. And the Chinese went on to retaliate by destroying 6,000 monasteries that were occupied by Tibetan monks and nuns. Just since 1996, 11,000 Tibetan monks and nuns have been expelled from Tibet because they opposed what has been termed patriotic reeducation by the Chinese government. And I think what most people have missed in this debate, worldwide debate, is that the Dalai Lama has not asked for political independence for Tibet from China, but rather a respect by the Chinese government for the religious and cultural traditions of the Tibetan people. In short, a term most Americans hold dearly, religious freedom. As I've met with the Tibetan community and gone to the Northwest Tibetan Cultural Center and participated in the Tibetan New Year on February 14th and talked with leaders of the community, it has struck me how similar that this struggle is with a struggle that more than just my ancestors were involved with in Ireland to have religious freedom in Ireland from Great Britain, to struggle for independence, to struggle for religious freedom. And in that effort, they too had thousands of Catholic churches destroyed and records burned, which forever has destroyed ancestry records of those of us who've tried to find our lineage back to the earliest history of Ireland. So it is a proclamation the mayor will read today, but it is a week from today that we will actually have a ceremony here at City Hall recognizing the struggle that Tibetans have had for over 50 years now to establish religious freedom in their country, cultural respect by the Chinese government, And I'm very pleased that Mayor Adams has agreed to introduce this proclamation. And we will have a ceremony here a week from today, which will culminate in posting the flag, the Tibetan flag, in my office right here off City Hall. So I urge all of you to attend. And at this point, Mayor Adams will read the proclamation.
Thank you, Commissioner Leonard. Whereas on March 10th, 2010, Tibetans throughout the world will be observing Tibetan National Day to honor the Tibetans who died in their struggle for freedom and to reaffirm the independence of Tibet. And whereas the suppression of unique and ancient culture, human rights, and freedom of Tibet continues to be viewed with concern by all freedom-loving people everywhere, and whereas the Northwest Tibetan Cultural Association is a nonprofit organization to preserve, promote, and continue Tibetan culture and traditions throughout Oregon and Southwest Washington, and whereas today we join the Tibetan community in Oregon to commemorate the 51st anniversary of Tibetan National Day and to show solidarity with the people of Tibet, and whereas on March 10th, 2010, there will be a commemoration in partnership with the Northwest Tibetan Cultural Association at Portland City Hall to observe Tibetan National Day, and now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim March 10th, 2010 to be Tibetan Awareness Day and in Tibetan Awareness Day in Portland, and may this celebration continue to be a tradition of this city.
Now we're going to have, I think we're going to kick off with the president of the Northwest Tibetan Cultural Association come forward and make some remarks, and there may be others that want to say something. So welcome very much to the Portland City Council.
Thank you. My name is Kelsang W. Funsok. On behalf of the Northwest Tibetan Cultural Association, I would like to thank you for this opportunity to address the Portland City Council. I thank Mayor Sam Adams and the City Commissioners for this proclamation of March 10th as Tibet Awareness Day in this great city of roses. Special thanks to Commissioner Leonard and his staff for helping us with this process. Tibet was an independent and sovereign nation for over 2,000 years of recorded history. Prior to the Chinese Communist invasion of 1949-50, the Communist forces were able to consolidate their iron grip on the Tibetan Plateau in 1959. March 10 is a special day in the history of the Tibetan nation. On March 10, 1959, the people of Tibet, fed up with the oppressive rule and devious tactics of the Communist Chinese, spontaneously revolted against the occupying forces. Of course, we were no match with our medieval weapons, if any, against the well-equipped and entrenched communist forces. For the last 51 years, Tibet has been under the absolute control of this totalitarian regime, marking the darkest period in our long history. It is estimated that 1.2 million Tibetans have died as a direct result of this brutal occupation. Thousands of monasteries and centers of learning have been destroyed. Our language and culture systematically suppressed, and our religion, the cornerstone of our identity, severely restricted. The fate of Tibet's unique national, cultural, and religious identity is seriously threatened and manipulated by the authorities. In implementing its policy of occupation and oppression, the communist authorities have flouted international laws with impunity and routinely violate their own constitution. The veneer of development taking place in Tibet with total disregard of Tibet's fragile environment is mainly for the benefit of the communist apparatchik and their cohorts. Tibetans are treated as second-class citizens in their own homeland, lacking the basic universal human rights of freedom of speech and religion. They are subjected to arbitrary arrest and detention, denied legal representation once imprisoned, and routinely tortured. Even children are not spared from these brutal tactics. Children have been shot and killed, and there are political prisoners below the age of 18. Enforced disappearances are not uncommon. The brave people of Tibet continue their peaceful resistance against this tyrannical occupation. The widespread demonstrations that took place in all the provinces of Tibet in 2008 was a thunderous call for reform and solution to the Tibetan issue. Yet the authorities continue to callously dismiss the legitimate voice of the people. There has been a severe crackdown by the authorities since then, and Tibet has been under a virtual lockdown. The Northwest Tibetan Cultural Association is a registered nonprofit organization dedicated to preserving our culture and sharing it with the greater Northwest community. We feel extremely fortunate to be living in the free world, in this great city, taking for granted all the rights that we enjoy without fear of persecution. We hope we can contribute to the enrichment of the social fabric of this great community with our unique heritage. At the same time, we also feel a great sense of responsibility to bring to light the atrocities being committed in our ancestral homeland. With this proclamation, we aim to bring hope to the brave people of Tibet and to help them realize that they are not forgotten, that there are people around the world who will speak up for them. To the occupying authorities, we hope to send a message that there are decent people around the world and in this great city who cherish certain universal values and who will not be cowed to remain silent. We firmly believe that in the end, truth will prevail. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you have people you'd like to have come forward?
Thank you so much for the opportunity. My name is Karma Wangchuk, and I am one of the executive members of the Regional Tibetan Youth Congress based here in Portland and Southwest Washington. Today, I'm here proudly representing the brave men and women of Tibet who have been suffering for the last 50 or so years under the Chinese communist oppression. Today, I speak on their behalf, and I'm sure they would be immensely grateful to the city of Portland for hoisting the Tibetan flag and for declaring March 10 Tibet Awareness Day. I stand here to speak out for them who could not do so in their own country. I stand here for them who are harassed and imprisoned for owning and displaying the picture of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Tibet was an independent country until 1959 with its unique and rich culture where people freely practiced their religion and carried out their daily mutant activities with peace and tranquility. That was until the Chinese PLA troops marched inside Tibet, telling the Tibetans that they came to assist by declaring to the world the so-called phrase, peaceful liberation of Tibet, when there is nothing peaceful about it. And everything changed for the worse. Over 1.2 million Tibetans died due to executions, starvation, and torture. Thousands fled the occupation into India, Nepal, and Bhutan, where they now have thriving refugee communities. The country of China these days is experiencing a booming economy and a rising middle class with many new millionaires. The picture of China these days is a government controlled by a few men with absolute power who I think live in constant fear and guilt. The common Chinese citizens don't have the basic human rights, and everything is decided by the few in power. You must be aware of the persecution of the Chinese citizens and intellectuals who dared to speak up their minds but were arrested and jailed for their actions. You must be aware of the Falun Gong practitioners who still are persecuted for their beliefs. When these things happen to the mainland Chinese, their own citizens, we can only expect the worst to other minority groups, including the Tibetans, who are treated as second-class citizens in their own land and who are fast becoming the minority in major cities across Tibet. Han Chinese are encouraged to migrate to Tibet with job security and economic incentives. The Chinese pride themselves in building the highest railway network in Tibet, but it is for their convenience in bringing in the troops faster and to drain Tibet's rich mineral resources. And this railway line has far-reaching implications on Tibet's fragile ecosystem, which will subsequently affect the whole subcontinent of Asia. We Tibetans are a strong believer in Buddhist philosophy of peace and nonviolence, and I think this is a strength and not a weakness. United States has stood up for truth and freedom all through its history, and Tibetans are no exception. Men in uniform of this great country has given up their lives and still continue to do so in Iraq and Afghanistan for those who are fighting for justice, human dignity, democracy, and freedom. And Tibet, it's high time that the United States stand up for the people of Tibet to show its solidarity and support, if that means flying the Tibetan national flag and just declaring March 10 as Tibet Awareness Day. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
So is there anybody else that wanted to testify? Maybe we could have, if there's more than one, come up at the same time.
Hello. My name is Choso Gyalnob, and I am the Students for Free Tibet Coordinator of the Northwest, and I'd really like to thank all of you for taking your time, your precious time, on something that's so important to our community. Section 1, natural rights inherent to the people. Section 2, freedom of worship. Section 3, freedom of religious opinion. Section 8, freedom of speech and press. Section 9, unreasonable search and seizures. And Section 11, the rights of the accused in criminal prosecution. These basic sections in the Oregon Bill of Rights seem only completely natural and mandatory for those of us who attain it. As I and a couple of other members of Students for a Free Tibet have realized the importance of this as we participated in the Oregon constitutional law debate about a couple months ago in Salem. Despite the obvious importance that we realize they serve, one must keep in mind that this type of freedom is not openly available everywhere in the world. In Tibet, the voices and opinions who differ from the official stance of the Chinese government face extermination. Those who choose to speak out despite knowing the consequences risk imprisonment, torture, their lives, their families' lives, and whatever else they have to lose. A simple act of defiance may prove detrimental to their lives. Notable political prisoners include Tundub Wangchen, a man with a six-year jail sentence for making a documentary, Tenzin Delak Rinpoche, a religious leader that worked for environmental and spiritual goals of the Tibetan people who was serving life, and more recently, Pema Ishi, Sonam Gompo, and Seong Gyatso, who received a two-year suspended death sentence, life term, and 16 years imprisonment, respectively, for inciting separatism and disturbing social order. Since March 10th of 2008, according to the Tibetan Center of Human Rights and Democracy, at least 1,542 Tibetans remain in detention or are serving prison sentences. Hundreds have been held without charge, and 334 Tibetans were known to have been sentenced, at least by courts at various levels, to varying prison terms ranging from a few months to death sentences. The 49th anniversary of the failed uprising shook Tibet and most definitely alarmed China, so much that it sent Tibet into martial law and sealed off the region from the rest of the world. Despite this, Tibetan monks were still able to get their voices heard as they cried and yelled about what was really happening during the brief moments they had to get the attention of foreigners in a government-orchestrated tour, specially made for international journalists, as circulating information to foreigners is generally something that will get you arrested. It portrayed why the censorship in Tibet was so excessive, what the CCP had to hide. During the 50th anniversary of the Tibetan uprising in 1959, the Chinese government prepared itself, expecting turmoil again, and blocked email, texts, calls, and other forms of communication from Tibet that were considered to be sensitive, mainly for the purpose that if something were to happen last year inside Tibet, a protest, a clash, or anything, then the outside world would remain unaware of it, marking it insignificant. Despite all the efforts of the Chinese government from 1959 till now, through all the actions they've committed and efforts to hide the truth, the basic outcome is that no one can truly hide the strength of the human spirit. As several different places in North America, such as California, Virginia, and Wisconsin have done, we now continue the trend of raising the Tibetan flag, announcing March 10th as Tibet Awareness Day. Despite whether you're in favor of independence of Tibet or whether you prefer the idea of a genuine autonomy, the core problems in Tibet of basic rights will be dealt with and must be dealt with inevitably, which is what Tibet Awareness Day does with Portland and Portlanders collaboratively. Thank you.
May I ask you one question? You mentioned a program you participated in Salem. Was that the We the People program?
Yes, that is.
And what's your school?
Franklin High School.
Well, congratulations for making it that far and for having a splendid team. I had a chance to judge the first round, and Franklin acquitted itself with great distinction.
Well, thank you so much. That program has really helped us understand why this is so important and why everything else about the Oregon Constitution is important. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Great job.
Anybody else?
Is there anyone else who wants to testify? This will be our last round. So if you want to testify, please come up. We have two other seats. All right. Welcome.
Honorable Mayor Sam Adams, Commissioner Randy Leonard, Commissioner Dan Salzman, Commissioner Amanda Fritz, Commissioner Nick Fish, and all those who are present here today, good morning, and thank you for attending to this session for a noble and just cause. Our karma, which means actions that determine our future state, has brought us together here. And my name is Namgyal Gyalnup, and I'm one of the community members here. March 10, 2010 will mark the beginning of 51st year of People's Republic of China's rule in Tibet. On March 10, 1959, massive uprising by the Tibetan people calling for freedom from the communist Chinese occupation that began in 1949 was met with brutal response from the Chinese military, and at least 87,000 Tibetans were killed at the hands of People's Liberation Army of China as a result of this uprising. This tragedy of the Tibetan people forced the Dalai Lama, the spiritual leader of Tibetan Buddhism, to flee into exile 7 days later. History repeated in 2008 when people in Tibet once again peacefully and clearly expressed their wish for freedom from the Chinese occupation. But this time, it was international news within hours or days, yet to no avail. This does not mean the Tibetans inside Tibet have failed. In fact, it means we as an international community have failed to act in support. As of late October 2009, the total number of logged protests is 235. These protests were held not only in the Tibetan Autonomous Region, TAR, but also in other regions which the PRC's government does not recognize as part of Tibet. These regions were the three provinces, namely Kham, Amdo, and Utsang of the independent Tibet. Following the protest, approximately 220 Tibetans have died. Nearly 7,000 have been detained, and probably half a part of them have been released. Thousands are missing, and the number of suicides is rising, especially in the religious institutions. Reports of executing those detained are still coming, and protests are still taking place. As we speak here today, the Tibetans inside Tibet continue to live a suppressed life, being deprived of basic human rights, such as freedom of expression, freedom to practice religion and culture, freedom to receive right education, freedom to carry their spiritual leader, His Holiness the Dalai Lama's photograph, freedom to raise Tibetan flag, and the list goes on. We, as the United States citizens, enjoy freedom almost in every form. We belong to the same human community. We are no superior to those suffering in Tibet. Then why this disparity? The simple answer to this is that they are living under a totalitarian regime, and we live in a free democratic society. It's our duty as peace-loving citizens of the world to speak out for those who are oppressed. At present in Tibet, possessing a Tibetan national flag carries a lengthy prison sentence with charges of splitism. In November 2008, Paljor Norbu, an 81-year-old Tibetan traditional printer from Lhasa, which is Tibet's capital, was sentenced to 7 years in prison on suspicion of printing the banned Tibetan national flag. Norbu, like millions of Tibetans within Tibet, including our grandparents and relatives, has endured a half a century of cultural genocide and human rights violations. Tibetans in Tibet who did not celebrate Losar, the Tibetan New Year, this year, celebrated the meeting of President Obama with His Holiness the Dalai Lama on February 18, 2010. They gathered in thousands offering prayers and letting off firecrackers without fear for their lives. One of their statements was they were happy and optimistic about the meeting and that the world, especially the United States of America, hasn't forgotten them. To respect the peaceful resistance of Tibetans, to respect those who lost their lives, and in remembrance of the tragic events of March 1959 and 2008, we, the citizens of Portland, request the Council to proclaim March 10th as Tibet Awareness Day and raise the Tibetan flag at the Portland City Hall on March 10th. If the request granted, we will join the cities in the United States like Berkeley, Charlottesville, Madison, 995 cities in Germany, 356 town halls, and 23 schools across Czech Republic, 190 cities and towns throughout Austria, 200 Belgian municipalities, and indeed the cities and counties in Tibet, where the flag was bravely flown amidst the historic protests that spread across the region in March 2008. Today's proclamation is no different than City of Portland's belief of respecting human rights, building peace, and ending discrimination. Therefore, we request the City of Portland to take this step, to take these two steps, and these steps will be in conjunction with what Oregon has done so far regarding Tibet. Proclaiming March 10, 1997 as Tibetan National Day, declaring May 2001 as Month of Peace when His Holiness the Dalai Lama visited Portland, Oregon from May 14 to 17, 2001. Senator Gordon Smith's bipartisan resolution with Senator Dianne Feinstein and a group of 20 other senators condemning the violence in Tibet, which was unanimously passed in Senate on April 9, 2008. Senate Resolution 643, introduced by Senators Gordon Smith and Russell Feingold, which was approved unanimously by the U.S. Senate on September 17, 2008. This bipartisan resolution urged substantive negotiations on Tibet between the Chinese government and representatives of the Dalai Lama. Senator Ron Wyden and Senator Gordon Smith joined a bipartisan group of 27 senators on April 2, 2008 in sending a letter calling on President Hu Jintao to bring about a timely peaceful resolution to the current crisis in Tibet and to respect the human rights of the Tibetan people. And in 2009, Multnomah County Commissioner's support for Tibet. Thank you all for your time and consideration. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So I would just close by, I think, acknowledging what probably everybody here is poignantly reminded of, that we take, you know, as many problems as there are in the United States, the state of Oregon, and the city of Portland, we often take for granted some of the basic rights that we heard articulated here today that some of our young people are very aware of from the Tibetan community, that is religious freedom, the right to express yourself, those basic things that often those of us who have been born here take for granted that don't exist in places like China. So thank you all for coming. We're happy to join arms with you in your struggle to have a cultural and religious identity for Tibet that's recognized by the Chinese authorities, and for reminding us of our own heritage. Thank you. We'll see you next week.
All right. Thank you all very much. Carla, can you please read time certain for 1040, item number 270?
Tentatively approve the proposal for a demolition review to demolish the historic Kiernan Building, Dirty Duck Tavern, a contributing structure in the Chinatown National Register Historic District, in order to allow the construction of a new 3-to-4-story residential group living and soup kitchen building to serve the new Blanchet House of Hospitality at 421-439 Northwest 3rd Avenue, LU 09171259DM.
All right. So this is quasi-judicial. We tentatively approve the proposal for demolition review as mentioned in the title. Staff is coming back to forward for our consideration revised findings to allow for demolition, and we'll hear in a minute from Tim Heron. Are you coming? Why don't you go ahead and sit up here, Tim? Following presentations of the findings, I'll entertain a motion to approve the demolition of the Kiernan Building, Dirty Duck Tavern, and adopt the staff findings. Tim.
Great. Thank you, Commissioners. Tim Heron, BDS, Design Review, Historic Review. What you have before you, and you all received this yesterday from Carla, are findings that essentially reflect the comments and testimony that we spoke to back on February 3rd. And what I am going to do is, I think what I'll do is I'll read out loud for you the summary of the findings. And then if you have any specific questions, I'm happy to answer them. Because I think the summary kind of grabbed, did a much shorter job than what the 30 pages does in three paragraphs or four. So if that's fine, I'll go ahead and do that. Portland City Council evaluated the proposal to demolish the Kiernan Building, also known as the Dirty Duck Tavern, against the 1, Comprehensive Plan Goals and Policies document, 2, the Central City Plan document, 3, the Chinatown-Japantown National Register Historic District, 4, the Old Town-Chinatown Vision and Development Plans, and 5, the Home Again, a 10-year plan and homelessness in Portland. The proposed project is designed to meet the unique and special needs of a targeted homeless and or at-risk population while providing a safe and stable environment that encourages workforce training and personal growth. Redevelopment of the site will enhance and upgrade the city's affordable housing stock, bring new life and activity to the streetscape, and enhance the community by returning vibrancy and life to the northern entrance of the Old Town Chinatown District. Council found that a new facility encompassing low-income housing, a soup kitchen, and other related social services predicated on Title 30.01, which requires city-subsidized properties to maintain a minimum of 60-year low-income affordability requirement, is the best use for the site. Additionally, the council noted the strong public support for the Blanchet House's work, as well as the specific plan support for this use on this block. Council also found that the deteriorated quality of the Kiernan Building since the district's nomination, combined with the lack of Asian ethnic heritage, favored a decision to demolish, and especially so considering the social benefit provided by the new proposal on the site.
I thought we specifically said we did not want that cited.
When listening to the tapes, I don't know that I heard a majority of counsel stating that, but if that's a concern, or we could certainly back into this.
Well, we can pull counsel, but I think we all, I think some of us expressed concern that deterioration of a historic building, I anyway, it was for me not a reason, and I'd